late start this morning. There are a number of things in this session that are being done on the fly, and I will assure you that I've been flying this morning. So I beg your forgiveness on that that one item. First thing I'd like to do is welcome Representative Springer to this committee. And Representative, without putting you on the spot, would you care to tell the audience what district you represent and perhaps describe it geographically?
Okay. I represent House District 17. I was appointed to this position by the Lynn and Marion County Commissioners Friday afternoon. Sworn in yesterday morning, so I'm on the fast track. My learning curve is more of a line right now. I represent the areas of Lebanon, and then Scios is in there. I'm from Scio, actually, and then up the canyon. So anyway, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And also like to recognize Senator Johnson, who's joining us again today. Welcome, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the courtesy that you've extended to me in being able to participate with the committee in talking about this particular natural disaster that devastated Northwest Oregon that encompasses my entire district. But it was Northwest Oregon this time. I think that this committee is dealing with issues that could be precedential. It could be any disaster, any other place. But I thank you for your extraordinary courtesy in inviting me to join you.
Well, thank you very much, and we certainly have benefited, Senator, from your sitting here with our committee as we've investigated the storm disaster. Let's see here. Business items here, or rather just housekeeping reminders, I guess, before we get started this morning, just so that all committee members know where we're headed here. As of Wednesday, that will be the last day for us to schedule any bills that are heard before this committee. And at this point, Patrick, I think we have all the bills that are before us scheduled.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Tomorrow we will be hearing House Bill 3606. Thursday we'll be hearing House Bill 3605. Those are the other two of the three bill package from the storm hearings. And then Friday we have not put the agenda up for Friday. We will be hearing House Joint Memorial 101, which is the Silver Falls State Park.
Okay, very good. Thank you. And February 12th, a week from today, we're moving quickly, will all work on House measures must be completed. So while we're not anticipating a late session either Monday or Tuesday of next week, it is a possibility if we don't have our work completed. So we'll try and avoid that if at all possible. Last day to schedule Senate measures will be February 19th, and then all measures have to be completed by February 21. And with that, today we're going to hear the first of a package of three bills. Oh, jumping the gun here. We have some rules here to adopt. And with that, folks, do all committee members have the House Committee on Workforce and Economic Development printout that's before you? Okay. With that, I'd like to open a work session on the House Committee on Workforce and Economic Development's special session rules here.
Mr. Chair?
Yes. Vice Chair Lim, please.
Do we need a discussion, or can we just pass it?
Well, that was going to be my next question, if everyone had had an opportunity to look these over. Are there any questions, discussions? Vice Chair Lim, did you have any?
No, I don't.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt the rules that we have before us.
Vice Chair Riley moves adoption of the House Committee on Workforce and Economic Development rules as presented before us. Questions or discussions? Yes, Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have scanned the rules quickly. The question I have is, do these differ in any material way from the model rules that we've already reviewed? I don't think they do, but...
Yes, Patrick, please.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Barnhart, these are in fact the model rules that were provided to us by the House Committee on Elections, Ethics, and Rules for committees to use.
They shouldn't differ. That answers my question. Mm-hmm. Thanks a lot. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Barnhart. Further questions or discussions? Seeing none, is there any opposition to adoption? Not seeing any, not hearing any. They stand adopted. Thank you very much, members. As I began to say earlier, today is the first day of the hearing on three bills that are coming out of this committee's Monday, January 14th hearing. It was a 10-hour-long session taking a look at the storm disaster that hit much of northwest Oregon. It was not exclusive to that area, but certainly the storm's impact was felt as greatly there as it was in any part of the state. We had a number of recommendations, some of which are perhaps within the purview of the House Emergency Management Committee, and Representative Boone will be handling those issues sometime into the future. We had three recommendations which are of an economic nature and certainly within the purview of this committee. And the first one that we're going to be hearing today deals with loans to local governments so that they will be able, presumably, to meet their FEMA match along with a couple of other items. We also have House Bill 3605. Patrick, that is going to be heard
Thursday,
on Thursday, which will, at this point at least, prohibit insurance companies from non-renewing or canceling insurance policies simply because someone has made a claim on their insurance policy during a natural disaster. And House Bill 3606, which we'll be hearing tomorrow, which would waive the one-week waiting period on unemployment insurance if someone is unemployed due to a natural disaster. So, again, this is the first in that series. And, Patrick, if you would please give the committee a background on this bill. And I will open a public hearing on House Bill 3607.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee and audience, House Bill 3607 establishes the Oregon Declared Emergency Recovery Fund. It requires that the Legislative Assembly appropriate general fund monies and allocates amounts of lottery monies to the fund as well. This bill has an emergency clause and would take effect upon passage. And I should also mention this measure has a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you very much. Okay, and our first witness that I'd like to call up, please, would be Paul Evans. And Paul, if you had somebody else, General Caldwell? And Ken? Welcome, gentlemen. Good morning.
Mr. Chairman, thank you.
Thank
members
you.
Of the committee. With your indulgence, I brought up General Caldwell and Director Murphy to kind of help set the stage for this bill as well as a brief synopsis of the other three the other two that we're going to be talking about this week. As you mentioned, sir, these three come out of the experience we had in December. Before I get too far, I should probably say I'm Paul Evans. I'm policy advisor for Governor Kulongoski on emergency preparedness and veterans affairs. The storm taught us a lot, and out of that experience, as we went through the discussion on January 14th, there were a lot of lessons learned. And one of the lessons that we wanted to focus on was the need for a tool to help the locals when it comes to matching reimbursement, and that is, in fact, the heart of what is before you today. House Bill 3607 would create the Oregon Declared Emergency Declared Emergency Recovery Fund, so that we have that tool, and there's, again, in that bill, several different ways to help local governments and regional governments in terms of the recovery period as well as the matching piece. no plan, as you all know, no plan ever survives initial contact. It's one of the things in Murphy's Combat, the rules of combat. There's a couple of changes or a couple of amendments we need to discuss today before we get too far down the road. The first is under Section 2E, providing funds for emergency payment of unemployment benefits for any federally mandated waiting period that the governor is authorized to waive and does waive. If possible, we're going to request that that be stricken, and we'll explain more of the detail when we talk about the one-week waiting period bill later in the week. But the bill itself does several things. The first is it would provide zero-interest loans available to local governments when it comes to matches. And I want to explain that. The committee, I'm sure, is very well aware. But when it comes to reimbursement after a disaster, there are three different ways in which the federal government under FEMA helps provide those funds. It's a 75-25% split, which is, in fact, what Oregon has right now with this declared emergency. There's a 90-10 split, which is very rare. And then in the worst-case scenarios, like Katrina, there is a federal government 100% split. But those days don't happen very often, thankfully. And what we're trying to do is build a tool that will be able to help the local governments in what we know to be the most usual circumstance, which is a 75-25 split. We did put in the bill a couple other provisions that are not directly related to matching funds, and those I want to explain as well. There are certain expenses during the initial phases of a response recovery that they're not planned for. They're an emergency by nature. And while we fully intend for the agencies to come before the E-Board in the normal traditional way to talk about reimbursement of expenses used during an emergency, again, there are certain expenses this emergency and most likely in the future that aren't covered by any normal budget. For example, the Governor's Recovery Cabinet put into place Brand Oregon as a project to try to help consumers understand that the Dungeness crab were safe. It's not under any particular program, but it was necessary to help consumer confidence, and it was deemed by the Recovery Cabinet to make sure that we kept that economy solid in the wake of the storm. There were other expenses that just aren't on any budget anywhere that were necessary, and we put those in this bill as well. We also put the provision for direct aid. There are certain times in that moment between a state emergency and a federally declared emergency where people need help. And the idea is to be able to match what other states, like Washington and some others, do. They have some discretionary funds they can put into their human services department to be able to help people more directly in that immediate aftermath. So this bill basically tries to do several things, but the heart and soul of it is to provide funds necessary to help locals get in the game so they can take advantage of the federal funds that are made available through the reimbursement process.
Thank you very much. Committee members, I think we'll have the panel run right through their testimony before we launch into questions. General Caldwell?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Brigadier General Mike Caldwell, the Deputy Director at the Oregon Military Department. And I want to lend my support to this particular bill. I think that you've heard the testimony previously in the January hearing about some of the issues that Mr. Evans has just described and in great length from local governments. For your consideration, I think this bill is long overdue. I come from a background of local government. It's been forever ago, but once upon a time as a county commissioner, I can tell you, depending on when a disaster hits you in the fiscal year, will depend on whether or not you lay people off or you borrow money to match these FEMA funds. I would have killed as a county commissioner to have had a fund that I could have borrowed money from, as our county could have borrowed money from, and then paid it back on a reasonable time frame. As it turned out, we ended up having to go to the local markets and actually borrow money from a local bank and pay the going rate for interest, and I think that's a pretty sad state of affairs when we don't bother to look at that to help these local governments, particularly the smaller ones. It just simply can't react. We've seen what's happened in Vernonia. We have a situation going on right now up in Marion County and in Santiam Canyon. I believe some of that area might be new Representative Springer's area, where these small towns and communities who have been severely hit by economic turnaround of our fortunes here in Oregon with respect to logging, and they have no resources. We're deploying up there this morning. We sent a team up there last night, and we're deploying up there this morning to help these folks out. At the end of the day, everybody always turns around and looks and says, who's going to pay the bill? In this case, and I down in Detroit, in this bill wouldn't help it as I read it, because we may want to consider an amendment. These local governments have no resources, and somebody's going to have to pay the bill for these services. In this bill, on the back page, line 6, it says, that's the wrong place. On the front page, in line 20, 26 and 27, it says it will be used for match monies. Again, in Detroit, FEMA doesn't pay for 75% for removing snow. They don't think that's their problem. So there is no federal program, and I'm sure Director Murphy will correct me if I'm wrong, but there is no federal program for that. So you may want to consider that as part of the changes that we look at if we're going to do some amendments. Again, I think that this is a good first step. If it was a perfect world and we could do it, we would want to attribute some funding source to this thing instead of the general fund or the lottery. That's probably a step too far right now, and I think we probably need some experience running the situation like this to figure out how that's going to be, and some more debate and some more discussion amongst all the different entities to see if there is such a measure that could be adopted later, maybe in 09 or even later down the road. Again, bill's long overdue. I think this is an absolute necessity for this state. I've said that for 25 years, and I'm just glad to see that we're even getting it on the table and having a discussion about it, because it's long overdue. And I'll leave it at that.
Thank you very, very much, General. Ken.
Chair Witt, members of the committee, my name is Ken Murphy. I'm the Director of Oregon Emergency Management, which is a division of the Oregon Military Department. Not much I can add to what Mr. Evans and General Caldwell said, other than I'm about 5 years shy of General Caldwell. We've been working on this for 20 years, my predecessors. I'm very supportive of doing this because, you know, the greatest need is at the local level, and money is usually, after life and property and the environment are taken care of, a lot of the issues deal with money are very important, and I can clearly advocate what General Caldwell said about Detroit and Idana in the Santa Am Canyon. They pretty much went through their budget in the first couple hours. That was their year's budget. So there's lots of issues out there that local jurisdictions really suffer from that we need to pay attention to. So I'm very supportive of it, that we need this. It's clearly, I think, the right thing to do for government to help communities out, because I think this state is very good at the responding part, and I think we should be equally as good at the recovery part.
Thank you very, very much, gentlemen. I certainly appreciate your support for this much-needed bill. Committee members, there were literally thousands of people that assisted in the storm response and recovery, but the three gentlemen before us were the folks at the top of the heap, and I just want to make it known that the three folks before us here today absolutely made response and recovery an issue that took place within literally a matter of hours, not weeks, not days, but hours. Gentlemen, I want to thank you on behalf of my district, as well as Senator Johnson's district, from the bottom of my heart, for the assistance that you made possible for people in great need. Thank you very much.
Questions or comments for this committee? Yes, Vice Chair Riley, please.
Thank you. on the comment about the canyon, as I read this, first of all, is that a declared emergency by the government?
Yes, yes, sir.
So as I read this, that would be covered under Section 2A and C. And I'm curious if I'm correct about that.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, and again, not being a lawyer, I would say that you may be correct, but B also says it'd be used to match. I don't know if that's additional, or is that, you know, so I think that just needs to be.
Yeah, as I read it, these are Condition A applies, or Condition B, or Condition
okay.
C.
And that's,
is that how you read it?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Vice Chair, that was what we put on the drawing board. we understood that that may be pared down because of finite resources. It would be my hope that we could keep it in there because it does provide enough flexibility, with the clear understanding that that the governor would report when different line items are used.
Yes, Vice Chair Lim, please.
Thank you very much. And as I read the back of this bill, section 3, number 2 there, each biennium the Legislative Assembly shall allocate from the Administrative Services Economic Development Funds to the Oregon Declared Emergency Recovery Funds and amount equal to 3 times the amount appropriated pursuant to the section. What's the 3 times? What's the current amount? What's the 3 times?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lim, again, as a starting point for this bill and the fund, the idea was to try to find a rational blend between finite general fund resources and finite lottery fund resources. And the discussion around the table when trying to figure out where to find money to make this fund happen, the argument basically came up that the predominant amount will go toward things that are linked to not necessarily economic development, but economic redevelopment, economic reconstruction, making sure that there's a vibrancy in that community again. So what we tried to do is come up with a formula as a starting point for discussion. The idea would be that if there's $500,000 from the general fund, it would be $1.5 million from the lottery, so the fund itself would be around $2 million to start off with. But again, that was a beginning point for a discussion about the formula.
Mr. Chair.
Please, Vice Chairman.
The $2 million, supposed to be $2 million, is that the current amount and the following biennium is going to be the 3 times, which is $6 million? What's the interpretation?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lim, the idea was to try to get the fund initiated and with the full understanding that as each legislature convenes a discussion about how robust or not robust an emergency plan we would have, the argument was that because this is a supplemental session, we didn't want to get too far into a large policy discussion, but we needed to have some funds because of the exigencies of this particular emergency. So what I'm trying to say is I think the idea is to build, A, a fund that is robust enough to respond, B, a fund source that is predictable, and C, one that is linked to several different decisions, and all of which related to how much of a commitment we're going to have toward recovery, which really hasn't in the past been a major priority.
But to answer your specific question, no, it would not. If there was $2 million in the fund and nobody used it, right, next biennium it doesn't automatically go 3 times.
Right.
That's a legislative decision each biennium.
Correct.
Whether they add to it, or they take away, or they can't take it away, they leave it as it is, or do they add more money to it? And that relates back to my comment that in a perfect world you would have a funding source that would generate money continually that would be dedicated into that. That may be a dog that won't hunt in this particular environment. So I think this is, as Mr. Evans says, is a starting place to get a fund established, and then it becomes a continual discussion each biennium through a budgetary ways and means process.
Okay. Just one more question, Mr. Chair.
Please.
I'm not sure at one point we need to, from the state legislature, need to provide 25% to the federal match. Do we need to have a 25% ready to match, get the 75% from federal government, or 75% is available at the time? Do we need to match it? When is that the point we need to match?
Chair Witt and Vice Chair Representative Lim, any time that we elevate a disaster to a presidentially declared disaster and individuals or public infrastructure, local jurisdictions apply for that, then they've made that initial commitment that they will pay the 25%. So really the trigger is once we declare a presidential disaster. And that's when that 75-25 split automatically kicks in once people apply for the money.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Vice Chair Lim, very much. It was important, I think, to clarify the point that
We will not be pyramiding existing funds, existing money in the fund.
Okay.
Additional questions? Yes, Representative Springer, please.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Caldwell, General Caldwell, would you have an opportunity after this meeting to chat with me for just a couple minutes?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Anyone else? I'm not seeing anything further. I know that Senator Johnson said it during the hearings on the on the 14th, but the two of us made repeated phone calls to you all, and as I said earlier, you responded in a matter of hours. And General Caldwell, you will forever be known as the guy who can't say no, and you are very much loved and respected in our district. Thank you so much, and all three of you. Thank you for all of your very long and hard efforts on behalf of people who truly needed help. Thank you.
I might just say we're crossing our fingers now, hoping that the freezing level stays down low so we don't end up with another test of what the state's capable of doing here in the next few months. So,
amen to that one, Mike. Amen to that one.
Knock on wood.
Thank you very much. Before I ask the director of the Western Oregon Rural Electric Co-op up, I'd like to recognize Representative Boone, who has joined us in the back of the room. Representative Boone joined us by telephone during our January 14th hearings, and any time that you would care to join us here at the dais, you would be more than welcome. Thank you. With that, because of time constraints, I'd like to invite up, please, Mr. Farmer. Good morning, sir, and welcome.
Good
Thank
morning.
You for traveling a considerable distance this morning.
Thank you, Chairman Witt. Members of the committee, I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. I am from Vernonia, and I'm the general manager of West Oregon Electric Cooperative. We've been in existence for 64 years there. It's said that we serve 2 million trees with 4,300 meters sprinkled among them, covering five counties. While they're very beautiful trees, they have a tendency to fall down and take power lines with them, as they did during the wind part of the of this last storm. So we not only had the flooding to deal with, but we had winds as well. We have the dubious distinction of having the highest rates in the state of Oregon, where the state average is 7 cents a kilowatt hour. We're at 11 cents a kilowatt hour, where the cost of service per meter, the average in the state is $34 a meter. We're at $61. So we already have a financial challenge just keeping the power on in our service territory. So every dollar counts at our little not-for-profit electric utility. And each dollar spent doesn't come out of shareholders' pockets, it comes out of our members' pockets. Roughly every $100,000 that we spend at West Oregon equates to a 1% rate increase. We've been hit not by one disaster, but two disasters back to back. December 13th of last year, at 2:27 in the afternoon, we lost our first customer at 4:45 in the afternoon. We were 100% dark, and we're dark for 3 days for the entire system. And that was a federal declared disaster as well. That storm has cost us over $3.3 million. FEMA match, because one of the counties was not declared a disaster area, FEMA obviously couldn't match in that part of our area, so we have to pay 100% of Washington County's portion of that $3.3 million. What we were required to match for the remaining portion for FEMA cost West Oregon Electric Co-op $675,000, which equates to almost a 6.5% rate increase from our members to help pay for that. This year's storm, as we said, was kind of two storms in one. While we were all gearing up for the winds that the media had told us was coming, little was said about the floods, and we just didn't think that much of it because the conditions weren't the same as 1996, and we never in our wildest dreams thought it would happen. But it did. So far, the damage is total over $1.5 million to West Oregon. The flood damage, there was over 4 feet of water in our in our offices. We literally took my staff out by boat from the front office and operations. We took out on the back of a line truck as they pulled up to the dock and jumped on, and we hauled them out. And a captain goes down with his ship, and I walked out in thigh-deep water after locking the doors and turning the power off. What was more of a concern to us was this event. We hoped the power would stay on. However, our substation located just down the street from our office had over 7 feet of water in it. The transformer held, but water got into the reclosers, and we lost power to the city of Vernonia at a time that they needed us most. And so it made it rather difficult for them to rescue themselves, as well as National Guard, to find them in the dark. And so it's going to cost us approximately $1.8 million to move that substation so it doesn't happen again. To move our office to where to higher ground is going to cost us about $5 million. And the damages from the flood at this point are over $700,000. FEMA will match a portion of that. FEMA will only match 75% of anything that our insurance doesn't cover. And that's on the flood damage. On the west side, the winds literally took miles and miles and miles of line distribution and just laid it on the ground. You know, that same wind just snapped trees off halfway up. Well, it just snapped power poles and laid them on the ground. It took my two crews and seven other crews a week to put it back up and get power fully restored. That cost right now, we're still receiving bills over that, but at this point it totals over $1.3 million. Again, our 75% match, we're looking at having to cover well over $350,000. So just in back-to-back storms is over $1 million of 25% matching funds that Little West Oregon Electric Co-op has to come up with, which is a 10% rate increase to my membership. I wanted to share today on a... That's from a business standpoint. I would like to share from a personal standpoint a story that directly affects not only this bill but also the next one that's coming, and I won't be here Thursday to be able to testify on that. But one of my good friends and neighbors on my street is one of the people that fits perfectly with the intent of what you're trying to do here. He has no insurance because his insurance company dropped him after the 1996 flood because he lost everything. Once again, he lost everything. Now FEMA said, well, you need to raise your house. The cost of raising his house is going to be over $60,000. So 25% match means he needs to come up with roughly $15,000 to $20,000. He doesn't have $15,000 to $20,000. And now FEMA's telling him, if you don't raise your house, you lose your house. So he's gone from not only losing everything twice, but now he stands to lose his home entirely. And once you lose that, it can never be built on that site again, which is all that he owns. So this hits me not only from a business standpoint, but from a personal standpoint, from people that are my friends and my neighbors who just don't have the funds. We're a real mix in Vernonia. While we have probably a third of our population that commutes and goes to work at places like Intel, we also, the other two-thirds, are at or below poverty level. We have a very very poor community. And so a lot of those people just either can't afford insurance, don't have it, and they. So 75% is nice, but when you don't have the 25%, it means you get nothing. So these people would be greatly helped by this. So we, as a business and as a citizen of Columbia County, definitely support the efforts of this committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions for or comments for Mr. Farmer?
Maybe Mr. Chair.
Vice Chair Lim.
Yes. My question is, 25% is the grant or the loan? In case if it's loan, how are they going to pay back?
That's a good question. As a business, I have much more opportunity available to me to repay a loan than the private citizen does. But even then, loan funds come on my ratepayers' back. So every, as I pointed out here, every dollar that I have to repay in a loan, is I'm going to have to increase their rates. So it's kind of, to me, like kicking them while they're down. So what would be more of benefit to those members would be a grant rather than a loan.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to put a finer point on what Mr. Farmer has said, because while he is discussing Vernonia, this could be lots of rural places in Oregon. In my old life, I was a commercial helicopter pilot, and I flew his line, can tell you that it is just miles and miles and miles of trees. There are no other options for people in his service district. Nobody else wants the service. And so I would submit that absent clean water to drink, a way to take away dirty water, and electricity, there can be no economic development. And Mr. Farmer sits before you talking about Vernonia and the poignancy of that instance, but this could truly be any one of dozens of little communities that at this point are out of options and faced with natural disaster, whether it's conflagration or flood or any number of other disasters that strike down their infrastructure. He speaks for Vernonia today, but he should speak to every one of us that has a small, isolated rural place somewhere in our districts.
Thank you very much, Senator Johnson. Additional questions or comments? I'm not seeing any. Mark, thank you so
thank
very
you,
much.
Chairman. Thank you, members of the committee.
Appreciate that. Next, I'd like to call up, please, Mark Labhart and Tony Hyde.
Mr. Chair, as they come up, I was just doing little signals back and forth with them. As they come up, I also would like to acknowledge their participation in the flood response. Commissioner Hyde, unfortunately, is a seasoned pro, having been the mayor of Vernonia in 1996 when Vernonia was devastated. Commissioner Labhart, hailing from Tillamook, has had more than his fair share of flooding. But just as we acknowledge the participation of the military department, these are two dedicated public servants who were out in the mud, out in the water, helping guide their county relief efforts. And we all ought to be proud of them. And I'm sure that their brother and sister commissioners all over the state would have done the same. But I think we had the chance to see them on the front lines guiding their communities in the response and now certainly helping guide their communities in recovery. So I just want to acknowledge their personal efforts to serve their communities in a really extraordinary way.
Thank you so very, very much. And I know Representative Boone's mobility is a little limited here, but I think she might like to say something from the back of the room. Please.
Did you call attention to the hobble?
Deborah Boone, House District 32, and I would like to thank both Tony and Mark and everybody else who worked so hard, and you, Brad, and Senator Johnson. These guys didn't even sleep, I swear. They were on call, on duty the whole time, and the sheriffs, everybody in our districts, just tirelessly working for the people, and it was really amazing. And thank you. I'm really glad that you're doing this bill. I'm glad you're doing these hearings on these, because this is something we need to keep in the forefront of everybody's mind, because although we hope it doesn't happen again and again, it will, and we just need to handle it. And Mark did a great job. I said, I'm the West Oregon Electric ratepayer back there. So thank you for indulging me.
Well, thank you very much. And guys, I just throw my thanks and appreciation in. Mark, obviously, I didn't have nearly the extent of communications with you that I did with Tony, but I know from Senator Johnson and Representative Boone that the phone calls to you were probably as many as the ones that I had with Tony at all hours in the morning, after dinner, at night, and gentlemen. Your constituents can be absolutely proud of the leadership that you have shown throughout this entire event. Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
Please proceed.
I'll defer to our senior county commissioner to start off with.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I am Tony Hyde, county commissioner in Columbia County. First of all, I just want to really thank the committee for the proactive approach in terms of putting this bill together in the last moments. And I clearly understand that this bill is not fully developed in terms of how it's going to be administered. And there's a lot of unanswered questions. Before I say much more about the bill, I would just offer up that the Association of Oregon Counties and I personally would be more than happy to help you put the sideboards and the administration pieces around this for a couple of reasons. One, because I know that needs to be done. Just having funding is one thing. How it's meted out is another thing altogether. And I would put a point of caution out. After the flood of 96, I was very proactive with a number of associations in trying to put a bill like this together. We did that to some extent, but when you started putting the administration of it around the bill, it ended up so single-focused that it wasn't very usable and functional in the end. So here we have this one. So again, I would offer up any kind of help that we can offer to help put the administration of this kind of bill together. Secondly, I would just say that this bill has an emergency clause, and all of us in government hate emergency clauses. It tends to go around a full vetting of any kind of legislation, but this truly is an emergency clause that needs to happen. I hate to say that we have an emergency and an emergency, but we do.
Yes.
The testimony that you heard a minute ago and that you'll hear from the schools is just a case in point. It's really not what this is about, but it is a case in point for the need for this type of bill. We heard in 96 when a number of governments, local governments, both cities and counties, got together with FEMA and tried to get some relief with the 75%, and they typically will do that if it reaches a certain dollar amount per capita. The response was, and I'll never forget this, if the state of Oregon's unwilling to help you, which most states do in this, why would we? And typically the state will help in some percentage when FEMA is considering reducing the 25% match. I'll never forget that, and I'm hoping that we set a standard that allows us, when it comes catastrophic enough, to really have that flexibility in terms of 25% match. When you have a declared disaster, you have three main issues in terms of recovery. You have individual assistance, you have public assistance, and you have the Hazard Mitigation Grant Program. With individual assistance, you're talking about getting people back in their homes and getting them whole, or as much as you can. With public assistance, you're talking about both the disaster fight itself and the cost for that, and you're talking about the infrastructure that was lost in a public from a public institution, both, for instance, with West Oregon Electric as an example, school systems are an example, cities and county road systems and state road systems are all examples of the public assistance. And then, of course, with a declared disaster, once the 18 months has expired, then FEMA will take 20% of all the monies that were spent in that 18-month declared disaster, put it on top, and that is a Hazard Mitigation Grant Program. That program is competitive, in this case, over nine counties, and is very, very, probably to me, the most important piece of a declared disaster, because this is the part that allows us to make sure that if we ever have another catastrophic event of this kind, that we're more prepared and less damaged. And it's a very proactive program, and it's something that we all need to pay very close attention to. In terms of getting people back in their homes, it's not as in the forefront, not as newsworthy, but when it comes to preparing ourselves through floodproof, for instance, in Vernonia, It is a critical program, and it again requires a 25% match, and it requires all of us to be very proactive and creative. So I just want to follow or finish by saying that again, I'm very pleased to see that the state is stepping up and doing this in the last seconds, literally in the last seconds of preparation for this short session. And whatever I can do to help personally and as the Association of Counties, we're certainly ready to do that.
Well, thank you very much. Commissioner Labhart, welcome.
Thank you, Chair Witt, and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Mark Labhart, and I'm a Tillamook County Commissioner. Before I actually start, I would like to look Representative Springer in the eye and say congratulations. For you to throw your hat in the ring and get into the fray is probably daunting, particularly since you were just appointed on Friday. So I wish you the best. You're doing the state's work is good work, and it takes a lot to be a senator or representative, so I compliment you on that. I'd also like to, just before I start, I want to start at the top and work my way down very, very quickly before I actually get to the points. I want to particularly recognize Senator Johnson, Representative Boone, and you, Representative Witt, for your leadership in this disaster that occurred in Northwest Oregon. Many said it was greater than 96, and I was here in 96 and dealt with the disaster at that time, too. But to have your leadership, particularly at the when the congressional folks showed up, when Senator Wyden, Senator Smith, Representative Hooley, and others showed up, you were there and very much supportive of that. And then I'd like to also move down to the state and compliment them also. And you the governor's office was extremely helpful to us. We were on the phone within a day of the disaster. A conference call. General Caldwell, we've already talked about him. He's outstanding. He's in our community this day. His troops are doing some work for us on this day, and will be there for 45 days doing some emergency repairs for us. And I can't say enough about the Office of Emergency Management and Ken Murphy and his leadership, and particularly Dennis Seacrest and I just blanked out on her name.
Abby.
Abby Kershaw.
Yes.
Just sorry about that, Abby, if you're watching. Just outstanding help. They met every one of our needs in Tillamook County. So with that, I'd just like to read the first paragraph, and then I'm not going to read any more. You're here this month as a test of annual sessions. One of the main reasons for having an annual session, I believe, is to deal with important state matters that come up between the biennial sessions. This matter has come up as an emergency for some communities and local governments in Oregon that is directly impacted by the December wind event, and our winter is not over yet. In fact, if you've been watching the weather, we're talking about some potential flooding, at least in the Coast Range, for this coming weekend with some rapid snowmelt. I was involved in the 96 presidential declaration. I was involved in the November of 06 presidential declaration. And I was involved, of course, in this presidential declaration. Many states already have this kind of a provision where they provide assistance and help with the 25% cost share. If there's any message I'd like for you to carry away, and that is, if in this bill, if you would keep it broad, providing the policy direction that you need to provide to ensure that your will is being implemented on the ground. But then when you do decide, and I hope you do decide to put a home with this bill, and that is with an agency, I'd hope that you would choose Office of Emergency Management to put as the home for this bill. And then as you give this policy direction with this statute and you develop the Oregon administrative rules that go with this, provide enough flexibility so that, as Commissioner Hyde said, that maybe the Association of Oregon Counties could provide some input into those development of the administrative rules. Some of the communities or local governments can help provide some assistance there, but provide that flexibility. It is my hope, if anything, we walk out of this bill with at least the provision that the state is there to help with that 25%. I could tell you stories, and I did in January, about a couple local water districts that lost all their power, and then they ended up losing all of their water system, not only
because they didn't have the power to turn it back on. They didn't have the generators, and they didn't have the water lines were destroyed by trees falling on the water lines. And they're very small water districts, and these are local governments that don't have the financial wherewithal to fund the 25%. So FEMA comes in and says, we're willing to help you. You qualify. You need to pay 25% of the cost share. And there's at least two small water districts in our county that just don't have the funds to do that. Now, loan, grant, that's up to you to decide. Of course, you know which way I would go, but you have to be the keeper of the state's money.
Which way would you
go? You have to be the keeper of the state's money, and so you need to decide that. But whatever way you decide, the help is going to be very much appreciated for those small water districts as well as some large communities. And then last but not least, I would like to also talk about the mitigation funds that Commissioner Hyde mentioned. Mitigation is a huge deal to the two counties that we represent, Columbia and Tillamook counties. Those mitigation dollars, we estimate that there will be about $10 million in mitigation funds that will be coming from FEMA to relocate businesses, elevate homes, do different things with mitigation funds. Those require the 25% cost share. And in some cases, some of those local governments will not be able to afford that. And so they will pass on the mitigation dollars. And so if there was money there to help with that kind of a system, that would be very beneficial. So I'm very much support of House Bill 3607. Keep it flexible, provide the policy direction, and we would be glad to help in any way we can with the Oregon administrative rules, and I would hope that you would put it under the Office of Emergency Management. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much, Mark. Certainly appreciate the considerable distance that you two have traveled here today to be with us. Questions or comments for Commissioners Labhart or Hyde? Yes, Senator Johnson.
Thank you. I would pose this to both gentlemen and ask for your responses. Absent a fund like this, will Oregon leave federal dollars on the table?
Yes.
Unequivocally.
Thank you. I think, Senator Johnson, that goes right to the heart of the issue. And when folks have lost literally everything but their lives, I think it would be borderline criminal to be leaving money on the table for folks that need it so desperately. So thank you for that question.
Representative Witt, members of the committee, if I could, last night I was at a FEMA meeting with Glenn, who is the FEMA representative for our entire disaster. And he had a really good point, and I want to elaborate on Senator Johnson's comment. He said these are taxpayer dollars that have been put into an emergency fund, FEMA, to be used for disasters. And he was encouraging the folks in the room last night, and it was the individual assistance meeting that Tony talked about. He was encouraging those folks in the meeting to apply for those dollars. It's not a government giveaway or a government. These are tax dollars that we've paid to do specifically the jobs that were designed for helping with flood victims. And so he was just encouraging people to apply for those funds and to help them to recover. And again, you get to the, well, how do I afford the 25%?
One last point, Representative Witt, members of the committee. I would, again, reiterate that we should make this as flexible as possible. This is not the county sitting here asking you for 25%. That's not what this is about. We don't know what this is about. There are going to be all kinds of, we're at least another 14 months into this, and there's going to be all kinds of issues that pop up. There may be an opportunity for the federal government to waive some of that 25%. And in that case, it wouldn't be 25%. We'd be looking for some instances, not all instances. To whatever extent we can do this on our own, we're going to do this on our own. I would reiterate again that we had two catastrophic events in December. The first one was a presidentially declared, and the other one was a 110th Congress adjourning without reauthorizing the Secure Rural Schools Bill, which is going to cut a lot of these counties' ability to mitigate these issues more than a considerable amount. So.
Well, and I just want to pick up on your point that you've done it on your own, and I my hat's off to you in particular, and to all the other residents in Brenonia who've pulled together and done what was necessary first during the rescue component of this disaster. I got up to Vernonia the night afterwards, and I was utterly amazed that that community had pulled together on itself, by itself, absent anyone else being able to get into the community at that point, had marked the community off into quadrants, and the citizens, those who had fishing boats, rowboats, whatever, were out there rescuing their fellow citizens off the roofs of houses and the Little League dugout park and a number of other places. And while all of this rescue effort was going on, the community by itself had established a MASH unit up at the basketball park and was serving hot meals while all this was going on. Your community certainly does know how to respond to a rescue, and you have done everything feasibly possible that a community could do for itself. And right now there are some Oregonians that need some assistance, and we're going to do everything we can to make sure that they get it. It may be your folks this time, but it could be any one of us in the future in a future disaster.
Well, I appreciate that, and again, I hope that in 10 years we're talking about the disaster of 07 and not the winter of 08.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair?
Yes. Vice Chair Lim, please.
Thank you. It could be a question. It could be a comment. There's no question that we should come up the 25% of the match. That's not the issue to me. But the issue is, have we learned the lesson? And you mentioned that we all know 96, there has been a big flood, whatever problems we had. And then between time we had one, and 10 years later, 97 December, we got a big disaster again. And we know sure yeah, it's going to happen again and again. And my main question and concern is, we need to prevent that in the future somehow. And how we are going to do it? The people affected by 96, are they the same people? Or are they different people? And did they, how many relocated or elevated? And, you know, this is the... a very important issue we need to discuss as part of this progress.
If I may, Chair Williams, Representative Lim, I'd really like to jump onto that one because that is an extremely good question, and we need to make sure that we aren't doing just what they call repetitive losses year after right. year. There are two systems in place. Commissioner Hyde mentioned it, and that the key for us, and we are both very supportive of this, is what they call the Hazard Mitigation Program. An example, we actually brought in at the January hearing Mayor Shirley Kalkoven from the community of Nehalem. They were devastated in the 96 flood. They used hazard mitigation funds to elevate the entire, I'm going to say city, but it's a town, it's a small town, of Nehalem. You did not hear any stories from Nehalem during this last event other than the success that they did not receive flooding. Tillamook, we are in the process right now. We've used hazard mitigation funds to relocate businesses that voluntarily want to be relocated out of the floodway, not the floodplain, but the floodway. So we've relocated some businesses. And then we are, we call them cow pads to get the cows out of the way, but we've got 100 homes on the list right now for either relocation of homes or elevation of homes. That's why this hazard mitigation money is so important. And then last but definitely not least, and Senator Johnson's very familiar with this, we've got an Oregon Solutions Project under the auspices of the governor, and we are using funds in Oregon Solutions to specifically address the causes of the flooding. In fact, that's what I mentioned, General Caldwell. We are in the process of developing some flood spillways starting today to get the water out of the floodways that much quicker. So we can't keep going back to the same thing over and over. We've got to look for ways to either move the people out of the floodways or to address specific flooding issues. And so we're doing that. And I think Commissioner Hyde's going to talk about Vernonia too. Yeah.
Representative Witt, Representative Lim, I want to thank you for that question. In 96, in Vernonia particularly, we raised 22 homes and we purchased four and just made them non-buildable greenways from that point on. Clearly, we have a lot more of that to do. There are things that we can do that do not cost a lot of money. We attempted in 96 to change the urban growth boundary in the valley so that we encourage growth in the high country and discourage growth in the low country. Just to change the urban growth boundary to expand into the high country really makes a big difference. We were unsuccessful in that attempt in 96. I'm guessing we won't be unsuccessful this time because we spent the following 11 years encouraging growth in the low country. So here we are again. I'm hoping that we learn from our mistakes. We also flooded our entire school system in Vernonia in 96, and we flooded it again now. I'm hoping, it's my fervent hope, that we don't rebuild that school back in the flood area again, that we get it up on the hill. It's going to be very expensive, but the truth of the matter is, it's catastrophic when you flood a school system. You essentially take the heart out of the city or of a community and you squeeze it. And that's what's happened twice. We have seniors that are graduating from high school have had two catastrophic events in their short lifetime. And it does affect them mentally. And I'm hoping that never happens again. So we are, the Hazard Mitigation Grant Program, as well as looking at land use in general and how we encourage growth, really makes a difference. And as I said, unfortunately, just 20 days before the flood of 07. It's not a matter of if we're going to flood again. We are going to flood again. It's a matter of when. And I say that again today. I also say that in terms of earthquakes. It's not a matter of if we're going to have an earthquake. It's a matter of when.
Thank you. Vice Chair Lim, your question was a most important one. And to the extent that there are public dollars that are being spent in terms of relief. We simply cannot be going back and re-relieving a problem situation. And I think to the community's credit, to the individual citizens' credit, they are having in-depth conversations right now about at least in terms of Vernonia. Literally moving the community to higher ground. I was at a meeting there along with the Senator and Representative Boone last week where Commissioner Hyde presented some brand new maps from FEMA that show the areas in very high detail that are subject to inundation. And these areas now are being looked at very seriously for creation of greenways. We literally, by the time this is over, stand the possibility of having a planned community in Vernonia. So with everything that's happened, all the flooding and the devastation, we I think truly down the road there are some tremendous and very great opportunities here. I have Vice Chair Riley next and Representative Huffman on deck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to follow up with Vice Chair Lim's comments and maybe come to the defense a little bit of those people who were the victims in both 96 and 07 in that in 96 it was thought that was a 100-year floodplain.
Five-year
floodplain.
500 years.
500-year floodplain. And so the fact that they didn't get ready for 10 years later is a little bit explainable. Now that they've determined that, no, it's not really. Situations changed. Global warming possibly is part of the problem, almost certainly part of the problem. But that's no longer a 500-year floodplain, and they've started doing the things that need to be done. But when it happened in 96, they said, "Oh, okay. Well, this has happened now. This is a 500-year floodplain. We've got a lot of time to get ready for the next one." So, my compliments for. Yeah. Now, realizing that that's not the case, and moving ahead with your plans. Thank you for doing that.
Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Chair Witt. Tony, maybe a few questions here. Did you say that after the flood in 96, there was an attempt to change the urban growth boundary? Or was that just a thought of...
Chair Witt, Representative Huffman, there absolutely was, and this is not an admonition of the state or a Department of State Lands, but we absolutely did a comp plan amendment attempt. It took about a year. It was very comprehensive, and it was denied by the state of Oregon because we had too many buildable lands within the urban growth boundary, which I lovingly call the floodplain. Now the floodway.
What do you think will be different this time?
We've already had preliminary conversations around this topic. The governor has, in his, what I call incredible leadership, has formed a recovery cabinet around this issue. Mark and I both sit on that cabinet, and we've already had preliminary discussions. Department of State Lands also sits on that cabinet, and we've probed this and said we are going to come at you with some design changes for the comp plan amendments to increase or change the urban growth boundary to encourage growth in the higher country. I just don't see that happening twice in terms of not recognizing the need for encouraged growth in the higher country, in higher areas of the communities. Also, I would say that Columbia County has begun to set a standard in that we take high water mark in unincorporated areas and insist that growth is at 1 foot above. Any new construction will be 1 foot above. Not floodplain, high water mark. And in this case, that'll be 07.
I'm glad to hear you're proactive. And it's good to hear maybe a common sense approach coming out of it. I just think it's devastating that we had to have a second flood to be able to come back to the table and talk to DSL or whoever.
Thank you very much, Representative Huffman, for underscoring that point. I mirror your sentiments, and frankly, I'm going to. I've had another question dawn on me here that I'm going to ask in a few minutes. Paul Evans and Ken Murphy to come back up and address, but maybe they would also speak to that issue when they return. So, Representative Barnhart, did you?
I wanted to proceed on the issue that we're covering now.
Please,
if I may, just for a minute. I appreciate what you're talking about in terms of planning for the future. I mean, getting above the high water mark makes a lot of sense to me. Reduces the possibilities that we'll be back trying to find 25% to match FEMA money in the future. When you've got a disaster once, you ought to plan to avoid the same disaster occurring again so those same tax dollars can be used somewhere else in a place where we didn't anticipate a problem. So that makes a lot of sense to me. What does the you mentioned the county restrictions on building. Does the county actually have the authority to restrict building which is within, outside the city, inside the urban growth boundary, and below the high water mark? Can you actually deny a building permit because something is below the high water mark now under the, either the state law or the current county ordinances?
Chair Witt, Representative Barnhart, absolutely. The county, we're working an intergovernmental agreement in terms of the urban growth boundary, in particular with the city of Vernonia because of this very issue. But we still have anything that's outside the city limits, we have authority on. Within the city limits, the City Council of Vernonia is meeting on Thursday night of this week to adopt the new maps that came out. They're draft maps, but the new firm maps, flood maps from FEMA. And I just want to take this opportunity to say that the speed in which FEMA and the Corps of Engineers were able to move to create these new maps is daunting. I actually had a surveyor agree to Edie's hat. which I didn't make him do, but he did make that promise. He said, I'll eat my hat if you can make the Corps of Engineers move that fast. I mean, as we most of us would know, Corps of Engineers wanted to acknowledge a permit application for 6 to 8 months, let alone do anything about it. They actually moved in, took shots, worked through Christmas, and worked 12-hour days to provide the maps for FEMA, and those drafts came out last Thursday. They will be adopted by an emergency planning commission meeting, followed by an emergency city council meeting in the city of Vernonia on Thursday of this week. So the city and the county are working in concert to be proactive. I fully expect the city council to take the 100-year floodplain and require construction, any new construction, to be 2 feet above that, which is also what we will be mitigating homes to when we raise them.
Chair Representative Barnard, I'd like to just add to that. Commissioner Hyde's exactly right. But part of the issue for these communities, and particularly communities that flood routinely, is that the maps are not accurate. And so they do have planning regulations that require the elevation or where you can build and not build in these. We've discussed some really important information yesterday, and you're probably going to hear about this during this legislative session, and that is there's a new system out called LIDAR. And LIDAR is a system that is being explored by a number of state agencies, and we had a presentation yesterday by some folks from the Department of Forestry, and we actually purchased some LIDAR information. It is within 1/4 of an inch accurate in terms of elevation. And so that is going to help us in redoing the maps so that we can redo our planning regulations both in the cities and the counties in urban and rural areas so that we can have better information to decide where you can build and not build. And so we are looking at this LIDAR information as very, very valuable. It can see right down. It is amazing technology, and it's state-of-the-art technology, and we are looking at that in Tillamook County. In fact, they're going to look at it in all of the incorporated parts of Oregon to do this LIDAR technology, so you'll maybe hearing some more about that. It's going to help us specifically to address some flooding issues.
Representative Hoffman.
Thank you, Chair Witt. Just a couple of points so that I kind of have my mind really wrapped around this. As far more along the line of homeowners and how the help works for them, first of all, if a homeowner was fortunate enough to have flood insurance in place, the elevating of 2 feet above flood level, the work that's done on the foundation, the work of the house, is that first paid by insurance and then FEMA would kick in, or vice versa? How does
Chair Witt, Representative Huffman, that would depend specifically. Let's just take a perfect situation. And given that we're talking about a catastrophic event, there isn't a perfect situation, but if a homeowner was insured, they're within the 100-year floodplain, and they were deemed more than 50% damaged, substantially damaged is what that's called, then the insurance company is required to pay for the elevation up to $30,000. If they were not insured and they were substantially damaged, they're on their own. However, they're still required by law to elevate their home.
So FEMA would not kick in for the individual then if they did not have flood insurance?
That's where the Hazard Mitigation Grant Program comes in. And with that money, again, last time in Vernonia alone, we were able to raise 22 homes.
Yeah, there's always a lot more homes than there's always a lot more requests than there is money to go around.
So with the Hazard Mitigation Program in place, is that the one that's set up for the individuals, and this Bill 3607 that we're looking at would be more for the municipalities, if you will?
That's correct, Representative. So
we're not attempting to look at the individual.
That's correct. This bill is really targeted towards local and county government.
Thank you.
Representative Witt, Representative Hoffman, I would just say that in terms of the individual assistance in the Hazard Mitigation Grant Program, the 22 homes that we raised the last time, we paid for the match for those homeowners through a CDBG grant. And we've made that application again. So we intend to explore every possibility. This is not our only hope, this bill that we're talking about today.
Follow-up. Thank you, Chair Witt. The individual that was mentioned by the PUD or co-op director a few moments ago, that he was is being ordered to raise his house by FEMA, and it's going to require $15,000 to $20,000 of his money just to get rid of the house. Is the hazardous mitigation grant program, is he eligible for that possibly, or?
Chair Witt, Representative Husman, absolutely, he's eligible for that. As Dennis Segrist, who's running the program for the state of Oregon, would tell you, and as he told us, that what they're going to look for the hazard mitigation grant program, and understand that it's $10 million, maybe more, over nine counties, they're going to be looking for low-hanging fruit. And I, as I told Dennis, we have enough low-hanging fruit in Columbia County to start a Saturday market.
point well taken.
Additional questions or comments? Commissioners, thank you so very, very much. Thank you very much. Just for my time management purposes here, we're going to have to be out of here about 5 till the hour. So that committee members have an opportunity to get to other committees. I have two folks left on my sign-up list here, Jim Walker and Dr. Cox. Was there anyone else who was intending to testify, just so that I know how long to let folks speak? Okay, that sounds good. I'm going to ask Jim Walker to come up, please, if you would.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
May I inquire Barnhart. Whether you're planning to hold a work session today?
I am not.
Thank you.
Please, come forward. Welcome.
Yeah, Republican Chair, due to time constraints and those types of things, my testimony at this time would not be necessary.
Thank you very much, sir. Appreciate your coming out today. Thank you. With that, Dr. Cox? Welcome back to our committee.
Thank you, Chairman Witt, Senator Johnson, members of the committee, Dr. Ken Cox, Superintendent of the Vernonia School District. Appreciate the opportunity to visit with you again today. I'm glad to be here today. In relation to the bill that you're considering, such an emergency fund is vital to the economic recovery of a community or a district after such a catastrophe. It's important that we take care of those who, after all they've done for themselves, find no other resources to work with, particularly schools and businesses and cities and communities. The December 3rd flood in Vernonia has impacted every member of the community, as you might well guess. Businesses have been impacted, as you heard today from Mr. Farmer. Some are still not operational. I drove by an office where our dentist, and there's still no sheetrock by his office today. He's operating out of a RV, if you will, and it's especially for those kind of situations. The district has done what we can to recover and get our students in school as quickly as possible. As you're aware, our 6th through 12th grade students attended school in Scappoose. Their last day going over the Scappoose-Vernonia Highway was last Thursday. Today, for the first time, our students in grades K through 4 attended school at 8 o'clock in the morning since the December flood. Tomorrow morning, all students in the Vernonia School District will be back in school in Vernonia beginning at 8 o'clock, and we look forward to that opportunity for them to all be together. Unfortunately, we're a long ways from where we need to be, because the schools that those students will be attending, we call it the Mod City, there was concern by the fire marshal because they're only 5 feet apart. We have 26 classrooms, roughly in the area the size of the infield of a baseball field. Mm. Our entire high school and our entire middle school, with the exception of some of the classes, will be located in that area. We're still in the process. We'll begin school without the phone system put in place. There's a number of issues that we are facing. We had planned on starting school today, but had to delay because of fire alarm inspections. We are moving forward. The cost of these classrooms is nearly $12,000 a month. Well, we are looking at other options to get our children out of the floodplain. The school district is facing a lot of challenges. The district schools, if you're familiar, are located, the district office, the high school, the middle school, and the elementary school, all in about a four-block stretch of land that is exactly in the middle of the confluence of the Rock Creek and the Halem floodplain. The new maps put us squarely in the middle of not just the 100 or 500, not just the 500-year floodplain, but the 100-year floodplain. And there has been some question as to whether or not the location of those schools there caused additional flooding in the rest of the community, because the schools being elevated to make them level could have caused some additional flooding throughout the community. Not that they haven't been there for, as in the case of our elementary school, since 1930. And our buildings are getting tired. They've been flooded twice, and we're moving forward. The need for such a bill as this, to find ways to help catastrophe victims, such as our district, deal with recovery efforts, is important. In our case, we need legislative support and, where possible, funding to move our schools to safe ground. Effective schools have a definite impact on the economic well-being and development of any community, and particularly small communities where the schools are the heart of the community. We didn't, as we looked at the FEMA resources that are available to the school, we found that our insurance covered much of our losses. And as we began looking, we found a number of areas in which some of our outbuildings, if you will, our concession stand that was built by our booster club and recently finished was not under the insurance policies, and so therefore all the losses there will be only paid through FEMA at 75%. The other 25% of those losses, grandstand repairs, we have electrical switches taking 440 volts of power to the football lights that were completely underwater, and we need to make sure that those are safe. And some of our outlying storage buildings were not covered by insurance as well. So FEMA provides a stopgap, but that 25% was not in our budget. Recognizing that our district has a budget just over $5 million from the state of Oregon, and the repairs for this single event is going to at least surpass $6 million. We do not have the capacity to take care of the things as we should. We do have insurance. The insurance is going to make us whole. The insurance declares that all of our buildings are repairable. But it doesn't make sense to me, nor would I think it makes sense to you, to invest any more money than we need to in the buildings in the floodplain, where very literally we could flood again this weekend, as there is snow in the mountains and the temperatures are supposed to rise, and water could rise again. I had a maintenance supervisor said he couldn't understand, as he came to work for us 4 years ago, when it rained, why people got nervous. After the flood, he said, now I understand. Because it is a traumatic event. It is impacting them. We're concerned for the impact it's had on our children, particularly elementary children. We put them back in classrooms as quickly as possible. They were back in the upstairs, the elementary school, a week and a half ago. Many of them glad to get back in the classrooms. But there's concerns, as that building has severe seismic issues, and That's one of the things that I would hope that the legislature perhaps, if not, obviously not at this point in time, but at some point in the future, consider ways to strengthen the schools throughout the state and look at those who are desperately in need of upgrading. Our students are going to school throughout the state in places where they shouldn't be for safety reasons as well as other concerns, particularly with respect to earthquakes. The I would encourage the committee and the legislature that if funds are available, the amount set aside in this fund be increased. If the revenue forecast comes into where this fund can be enough, it would be necessary that we increase this. In order to get our schools out of the floodplain, we need $30 million minimum. And while we would not expect all of that to come from the legislative body, we would certainly not turn down $5 or $10 million if they were to come our way. We will be going to the community this November in a bond program. But as you've heard, that's going to be a challenge for our community. It's a not a poverty community, but the community is struggling. Many people are still paying off loans from 96 as they seek to take loans out again. So it's important that as we move forward and as you consider this, that you continue to do what you can to provide a way for future events. I commend you for looking to the future of Oregon, but please don't forget the present. We are not out of the woods yet, as our district is. We're trying to get our students back in school. We have teachers with folding tables and folding chairs for the classrooms, which we will replace as we can. We still don't have our documents that were flooded back, so we don't know half of where our records are. But we're moving forward. But we have to do something to get our schools out of the floodplain. We appreciate the fact that you are taking this step forward to do that. We're not out of the woods yet as far as the Vernonia School District is concerned, and we need your help in at least seeing a light at the end of the tunnel. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Cox. Questions or comments from the committee? I'm not seeing any. Committee members, I just want you to know that Dr. Cox is very much a hands-on superintendent. Aside from his leadership in trying to recover from this disaster, while the flood was on, he and his wife were up to their knees forming a so-called fire line and literally trying to salvage every single item that was physically possible to get out of those schools before they were inundated, and worked feverishly for a good many hours to the point I think probably of exhaustion, and job well done, Dr. Cox. Thank you so much for coming today.
Thank you, Chair Witt, members of the committee.
Thank you. With that, I would like to call back up again, please, our first panel. Real quickly here, gentlemen, because we only have about 7 minutes. Appreciate your coming back. While the testimony was going on, it occurred to me, and Patrick and I were whispering here on lines 23 and 24 of the bill on the first page. It talks about the bill talks about providing loans or grants to local governments, as defined in ORS 174.116,
and school districts. Now, I'm just curious, and something that we need to know as we look at potential amendments here, who all is included within this particular definition? Would that include special districts? Would that include ports? Would that include, I'm not thinking of anybody else, but anyways.
Mr. Chair.
Not trying to put you on the spot, but we need to know this.
Yes, sir. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, in our mind's eye, which again is very flexible, but in our mind's eye, any public entity, we were trying to make sure would have some form of help in terms of getting to that match.
Okay.
So ports and those should be included, and certainly special districts would be included.
Okay. And does that would that also include? Do we know, like the utility district?
That one, can I think it would?
Or rather, the cooperative. Yeah,
it's a government entity.
Right.
Okay. All right. And I'm suspecting that this may need a little massaging here in terms of the language that we have to make that abundantly clear. Senator Johnson.
I would agree with that, Mr. Chair. While in concept I support this bill without equivocation, this piece begins to trouble me. And I'm thinking of our recent experiences with Connect One and Connect Two, where we had $100 million and the subscription was way over. I'm just mentally running over what District 16 looks like in terms of the applicable entities. And a de minimis amount of money vaporizes pretty quickly if it's open to all comers. And who that deciding authority or appointing authority is, I think, is terribly important. I could even see myself at this early stage saying that this would go to counties and we build on that. I know that the county commissioners testified make it as flexible as possible, but I don't think we need to hit a home run at every at-bat.
Right.
And I'd like to make sure the fund is established and perhaps the sideboards are a little tighter than they need to be, and then we see how it applies in the field and broaden them as necessary. But I'm really concerned when you start tossing open to every public utility, every sewer district, every cemetery district, pretty soon the money's subscribed and there isn't any left.
The soup gets pretty thin at some point. So,
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee,
different point.
And I mentioned this earlier. I think ultimately, at the end of the day, there's going to have to be some good discussion, with your colleagues about how this thing is funded. I think legitimately, we've all been around long enough to know that some years there's money, some years there isn't. And if there isn't some sort of mechanism with a ceiling, and I agree with Senator Johnson, is that there is the need. You've seen the need. It's been demonstrated, whether it be PUDs, special water districts, whatever the case may be. So the question really becomes is, do we want to just forget that class of Oregonians and say, sorry, we can't help, and let them fend for themselves? Or does the state feel an obligation to do it? And if so, if the answer is yes, then I think it's all of our responsibility to work for solutions to how to fund that fund. Agreed. I would agree also with Senator Johnson that let's get something going now. Whatever we do, let's get something going now so we don't bog it down with a tremendous amount of rhetoric and on all the different things when it comes to public funding. And if we get something on the table, then at least we can build on it.
And Chair, what Senator Johnson, there is a piece to this that's not in statute and won't be for some time because we're working through the mechanics. But it was conceived that these funds would be focused in economic recovery zones, areas that are hardest hit in the situation where it's a large declared emergency. So I absolutely agree. We want to make sure that we spend scarce resources where we can and target those areas that are hardest hit and certainly that have the highest need. I also agree that if you want to go through the counties in terms of recognizing them to lead the effort for public reimbursement purposes, I think that works. I want to make sure, though, that to emphasize what was said a little bit earlier, flexibility in terms of some of the other ways that the money could be used are also important, too, and that there will be things that come up. And again, this time, as it was mentioned, this time it was a flood and it was Vernonia. I don't know what the next emergency is going to be. I do know that through the governor's recovery framework and the capacity to try to harness the government at the same time as develop partnerships, that having some funds available to be able to do things in the moment will save a lot of cost over the long term. So, again, we're certainly flexible in making how to make the fund work, but we really do believe the fund right now is important.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, please, Larry Johnson.
I'm glad you said that. I don't want to get bogged down here where there ain't no mud. But
right, right.
I think that that potential could exist. I have just watched what happened in economic development, though, where all of the interest began coming in and putting in silos the money. And we're talking about right now a concept of a fund and a de minimis amount of money. And I want to be really careful that we don't start the internecine squabble among the special districts about whose need is paramount, and we lose the point of doing this, which is to have some nimbleness, some responsiveness. And again, I would go back to just get this moved forward in this truncated session and suggest that the county commissioners might end up being the appropriate appointing authority, and we broaden it out in 09 once we get the thing established. I think it's imperative we leave here with the fund. But I just don't want to get stuck when we start fighting about allocations of scarce dollars.
Thank you very, very much.
Mr. Chairman, I'd make one last perhaps recommendation. Since there are going to be amendments, I think pretty much everybody, their testimony today, we know who the main players are and the interests are. Why don't we get with your committee administrator and make some of those suggestions that have obviously come up in the debate and the discussion, where we can maybe add a few items that will give some sideboards and some structure that you're looking for, with keeping Senator Johnson's comments in mind. That, and I think everybody, we want to get something out of here. We don't want to bog this thing down and make it so heavy that it won't move.
Thank you very much for that suggestion. In general, that is precisely my intention. And I'm going to ask that that Patrick get with you three. I'm going to take up the commissioners on their offer to assist in establishing some sideboards. Involvement of Representative Boone and Senator Johnson. And please keep us informed on this, Paul, please.
Chair Witt, one other item that was briefly mentioned, and Representative Huffman talked about it, and I know we're short on time. If anybody would like to talk about some of the issues related to the potential area and the school move and DLCD and state lands, that issue that was mentioned earlier, I'll certainly meet you out in the hall because I know of time. But we are trying to work through that process, and we are committed to making sure that this time doesn't repeat the last.
Thank you so very, very much. Representative Barnhart?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's obvious you're ahead of me. I hadn't thought about the issue of the statute being over, or the bill being overbroad. There are actually, in the statutes that's referred to, 174.116, there are 36 local service districts defined in that, or types of local service districts defined in that statute, plus local governments, meaning cities, counties, and local service districts. So the concern that you and Senator Johnson have expressed makes sense to me. I mean, it includes everything from economic improvement districts to road districts to 911 districts to port districts and everything in between. So figuring out how to limit this thing initially may make some sense. Reference to this statute in the process of limiting it also makes sense, because the statute, I think, is a well-defined one.
Well, thank you very much, Representative Barnhart. With that, gentlemen, thank you so very much. Commissioner Hyde, did you need to...
Sarah Witt, I do have one other comment with regards to how broad this needs to be. I would just say that, first of all, I've already said that it needs to be flexible.
Yeah.
But I concur with Senator Johnson with regards to creating silos for entitlements. As an example, we have an opportunity for a number of ways to approach the hazard mitigation grant program in Columbia County. We could have done it individually. The city of Vernonia would have been able to apply as well as the county. What we did was decided to make one application countywide. So in that particular case, as an example, the county will be overseeing the whole hazard mitigation program. I would also say that it's the county's responsibility, at least from my eyes, to make sure that all of the citizens within the county, irrespective of what their particular stripe is, whether it be a water district, a school district, or a city, or an individual, are made as completely whole as they can. So I'm not too worried about trying to ferret this out into different organizations. And I do think that creates a lot of issues.
Thank you, Tony. That's helpful. Thank you very much. With that, I'm going to bring this to a conclusion. Before I do, I just want to state for the record that none of these bills would have been possible without the support of my fellow committee members. These bills were late to the process. Obviously, the natural disaster was unanticipated. But I want to thank the support of my committee members in making these bills possible. It will serve not only the folks that suffered the disaster in our district here, but I think will be a good public policy on into the future. This has been a bipartisan, bicameral effort to make this possible, I have never been so gratified, ever, with the response of my colleagues in making all of this possible. Thank you so much. With that,
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Vice Chair Lynn.
The President Nelson is here. I don't know whether that's
just one.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Representative Nelson. Welcome here. Mm-hmm. And with that, we're adjourned until tomorrow morning. Thank you.
Thanks for making me the camera.